For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Biggest questions coming out of the semi-bye week for the Houston Texans as they had the three-day weekend to lick their wounds, and now they're back at it. They'll get back at practice on Wednesday. D'Amico Ryans meets with the media today. D'Amico and CJ will meet with the media on Wednesday. So it's back to a normal week this week as the Lions come to town for a primetime game, Sunday Night Football. The Lions, in my opinion, are the best team in football right now. They are a five-point favorite over the Texans. So as we embark on this week, here are the biggest questions I have for the Texans or about the Texans coming into this week, Seth. And I'm going to start with a cut from D'Amico here following the game on Thursday night. We've not heard from D'Amico since the post-game press conference on Thursday night. So there's still a lot of questions to be answered, especially with the trade deadline coming up. We'll get to that in a second. Here was D'Amico when asked, "Hey, man, CJ's taking a lot of hits. How sustainable is this whole thing?"
"Anytime you get sacked that many times, it's not good enough, right? Don't want our quarterback getting hit. As many hits as we took is not good enough. And, you know, we got to make things adjust. We got to adjust. We got to change things moving forward."
"We got to change things moving forward." Now, okay, so that could just be him saying things to say things to get through a press conference. But let's take it at face value. Let's take it literally. We know there will be change because change has been thrust upon them at the very least. There will be no more Kenyon Green. So there will be change.
Yeah,
we know that.
Yeah.
What are the possibilities? Like, if you had a handicap, what do you think the actual change is? It just, hey, here you go, Jarrett or Kendrick. You're the left guard now.
No, I think that, for one, I mean, the offensive line, both in the run and the pass game, they just still look way too haphazard in how they're picking up stunts, how they handle movement by the defensive line. And it's, yes, the left guard is the easiest to isolate, but there's also times where Titus Howard, Shaq Mason, Juice Scruggs just look kind of inept and flailing in space. Laremy Tunsil, not as much. I mean, Laremy Tunsil, I think, has bought in more to the run game this year than he ever had before, and he does some pretty damn impressive things. So as much as his false starts continue to pester us, it's the entire operation just isn't right. And I think that's where it comes back to coaching. There's too many times where they're flummoxed by basic stuff that you just wonder, what are the rules that they're operating by? Why is this so difficult for them? Is it also just the fact of the matter is that Shaq Mason and Titus Howard might not be as athletic as you thought they were, or Shaq Mason has gotten old?
Yeah, I think when D'Amico said that after the press conference last week, we were at a stage, especially with the offensive line, where a lot of Texan fans were just trying to grasp for anything that was going to tell us something's going to be different moving forward. And after a loss like that on Thursday, people are naturally very angry. I was very angry, for sure. People want their pound of flesh. I think that there were a lot of people hoping the change would be something in the coaching staff. That, hey, okay, like this is a fireable offense level performance by this offensive line. They are getting CJ Stroud killed. They are making him jittery. Some of it's on CJ too. Like, there's blame to be, but like, I have a feeling if CJ Stroud were being protected competently, we would not be having any sort of conversation about performance levels with C.J. Stroud. He has proven when he is protected well, he is one of the best passers of the football in the league. So I think people were hoping, Seth, like, hey, position coach fired. Hey, news of a demotion, you know, that they, maybe they take play calling duties away from Bobby Slowick, either temporarily or whatever. I think that's what people were looking for. I think if there were something like that, we would have heard it by now, especially if they're, well, obviously, if you're going to let somebody go, do what the Raiders did and just do it right after the game last night. You know what I mean? There's no reason to sit and stew about it over the weekend. So what's your sense, is it the same guys coaching the same stuff when we start practice on Wednesday this week?
That's the hard part is, okay, with Chris Strausser, again, we'll go into the fact that they hired a guy who had no familiarity with a type of scheme like this, and he's trying to learn it on the fly last year. I think the presumption would be, okay, well, so by after an offseason spent, you know, refining techniques and coaching methods and all of that, that surely it'll be better this year. And I think maybe that was just a bad hire. That might have just been flat out a bad hire. And that goes back to, okay, why'd you hire? I mean, it's one of the most frustrating things in the world in the NFL, Sean, is that as much money as you pay the players, as many resources as you have, sometimes they hire position coaches that just don't make any sense.
Yeah.
And part of that's because, you know what? The good position coaches tend to be under contract places.
Right.
They get, like you pointed out, Jeff Stoutland earlier, the offensive line coach for the Eagles, he's been there through three different head coaches. They stick with him. New head coaches come in and say, well, God, I'm not going to go out and find somebody as good as this
right
now. So, so where do you go find mid-season an offensive line coach that you feel better about? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, unless
maybe
they meet
Jeff Saturday.
Yeah, well, unless there's somebody on the staff they feel is an up-and-comer. You're right. Like, it's not – that would be a move that you would make because you think that some sort of jolt to that room – would happen. Like, hey, oh my God, they just fired the position coach. Like, but I don't feel like that's a joltable room, if you want to know the truth. Like, I don't know. If we're reading Kenyon Green's dad's tweets to mean anything, at least one lineman in that room is not a Chris Strausser fan, you know?
Yeah. And that's a tough one, you know, because there's always, obviously, people are going to stand up for their own and everything.
Sure.
So I try not to read too much into, you know, Kenyon Green's. What did he say about the Chris Strausser?
There was a tweeter that said, can we also get the... When Kenyon's injury was announced that he's out for the season, there was a Texan fan who said, can we also announce that the offensive line coach is out for the season as well? And Kenyon's dad replied, facts! That was it. Just one word, facts. Yeah. So,
there are plenty of good offensive lines that have questionable talent levels at various positions on their team.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the guys that get beat quickly or the guys that just let people pass them by, and when it's happening continually with different players, not just Kenyon Green, that's where you got to start wondering whether it's the coaching itself or whether the scheme and Bobby Slowick's rules for how they're handling things are off or too difficult for these guys to manage. But it just continues to be this kind of stumbling basic, wait a second, I've seen high school offensive linemen pick up stunts better than these guys. What the hell's going on?
Yep. Just for some context, the pressure rate that the Texans offensive line allowed through the first 6 weeks, 32%. The last 3 weeks, 48%. A 50% increase in pressure on C.J. Stroud. So that's
question. False narrative, lazy narrative,
yeah.
Lazy narrative.
Well, that's, and I do wonder too, like between Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans, like how they're feeling this weekend, like having taken up for that group the last, like they've taken some bullets for that group the last couple weeks, and it's not gotten any better, you know? Like,
right.
I'd be pissed.
Listen, we trust you guys to get this done. We believe in you.
Yeah.
And this is how you repay me.
That's right.
Hey, once you're a cuckold, you'll remain. You know, it's just I trust her. It's all in the past. Like, yeah. There she goes again. She's got a new OnlyFans.
Question number two.
The O-line went out and got themselves an OnlyFans
channel.
That is an
OnlyFans I will not subscribe to. Question number two. What does the trade deadline hold in store for the Texans tomorrow at 3 o'clock? Tomorrow at 3 o'clock is the trade deadline. Seth, I put up a poll, as I said I would last Friday, to Texan fans on what position they would like to see prioritized for tomorrow's trade deadline. No moves have been made yet by the Texans. You, of course, polled the fans informally a couple of weeks ago before we had Nick Caserio on the show, and the overwhelming selection then seemed to be a defensive back. You demanded that Nick trade for a defensive back. That has shifted greatly over the last two to three weeks. We did the interview with Nick after the New England game. So this is before the three-game stretch where it's gotten super, super bad with where it's averaged 48% pressures. 90% of the people in this poll would like a guard.
This is where I stand with
90.
It.
This is as unified as the fan base has ever been on something.
When I had my rant on my YouTube channel at 2 a.m. on Friday morning, I kind of was teed off because a couple people had accused me of just ignoring the big issue, which is offensive line. And I don't. I start everything off with saying that this is a huge barrier, but I don't know what they can do to fix that. And I don't know if a coaching change makes a difference. I don't know because it's that bad. So I do know that trading for a cornerback that can come in and cover guys like Davante Adams in man coverage instead of Jalen Petrie would be a big boost to that defense. Like, at this point, this is what I'm looking at. For the Texans to be genuinely better, I don't know exactly what they can do with the offensive line in season. And I don't think that bringing in a swap out for Kenyon Green solves a lot of the other issues they've had, both with the interior and Titus Howard in the run game and everything else. But I do know that if they had cornerbacks that could cover in man better than the safeties they have doing it now, and I think if just Nico Collins comes back, those would make the team better with or without a scheme change or anything else like that. That would actually make the team better. I don't know that bringing in a new guard at this point really makes that big of a difference, even if he's a veteran who knows what he's doing.
Yeah,
because I feel like he could be corrupted by all the filth around him.
To me, it's all about prices and like offensive line and guard. I'm with you on the chances of that, so you know, being some sort of elixir that solves everything. If they duked a day three pick, like a 6th round pick. For some guard, a veteran guard from some team, I'm cool with them doing that. If it doesn't work, then you go with Jared Patterson. You know what I mean? Like, I'm cool with them trying things, but not to the extent that you're trading a 2nd round pick for a guy thinking it's going to fix things. Now, like a corner, I would trade a day 2 pick if it's a good enough corner that you're getting in return.
Yeah.
You know, a 2 or 3.
That's like bringing in a good reliever or something.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about the slot corner because Jalen Petrie plays slot corner. He's not a slot corner.
Well,
and I spent all training camp wondering, like, what they are they really going to stick? I specifically said Davante Adams at one point in training camp. Are they really going to stick Jalen Petrie across from like Garrett Wilson or Davante Adams in the slot and expect him to cover them man? Because he can't do it. And I mean, it's not his fault. That's not who he is.
No,
he wasn't drafted to be a cornerback. And he was drafted to be a safety, and it turns out he wasn't even good at safety. So, like, you've got him in this star position, which is a hybrid of a lot of things. But this is, again, via Jason Bristol from KHOU. If what you're into is chubby, sloppy offensive lineman, if that's your thing,
yeah,
if that's what you're into.
It's kind of my kink. Yeah, give it to
me. It's only happened in the last 5 seasons, only 4 offensive linemen have been traded at the trade deadline. They are Ezra Cleveland, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, MD.
Was that the doctor? Yeah.
B.J. Finney and Austin Corbett.
Okay.
That's the sum total of all the offensive linemen traded at the trade deadline.
That's fine. Yeah, and I get it. Like, I understand the messaging with that is like, hey, this just doesn't happen very often. Maybe because teams feel like that can't be a big impact thing. My counter to that would be this is so outside the realm of something that would fit into normal that I could see the Texans making a trade. And if it were Austin Corbett or whatever the 2024 version of that is for a day 3 pick swap, I'm totally cool with that if they think that might help the situation a little bit.
If it's a veteran who just flat out knows what he's doing and can come in and steady the ship a little bit, then yeah.
Yeah.
And the objection to bringing in new offensive linemen is usually, well, the continuity and the cohesion and all of that.
Okay, cohesion of what?
Yeah, exactly what continuity and cohesion are you disrupting, or would a veteran offensive guard be unable to adapt and grasp?
There's no doubt.
This intricate symphony of finely tuned instruments you have operating on the offense. No.
Yeah, for
it's
sure.
It's not that way.
Quick text. We'll get to the last two questions I have here. 5 Hour Energy fan line. 5 Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football superfans. Mr. Optimistic texts in. I think Houston is going to riot if there's no move made this week for the Texans. I think fans will be very disappointed if there's not a trade at the trade deadline. Just in general, you know, like that, because there's things that need to be fixed on this team right now. You know,
and we are in threatening a riot season right now. So,
predicting a riot, what will happen at the trade deadline? That's question number two. The other two questions I have are medical, and I don't know what kind of, and I guess there really should be three if we throw Jarrett Patterson in there, because he's concussed or was last week. So I'll throw Jarrett Patterson in there. But number three for me, and you touched on it, Seth, there's this big assumption going on right now that Nico Collins is going to be back this week. We've not heard anything. We've heard reports and rumblings that he's doing really well. We've seen video of him working out and he looks good. But that's a huge question, especially considering who your opponent is this weekend.
Right.
The Detroit Lions. Are we getting Nico Collins back this week?
Yeah, and Nico, I hope he's been feeling good for a couple weeks already and that you can feel that solid about it, because this is 100% the type of game where Nico might, if I were Nico and I felt like I was 90% and we were about to play the Lions, I'd be like, yep, 100%.
I feel good, coach.
Ready to go. Nope. Nothing. And I want to get out there for this one.
And
right?
I'd be doing that thing where you take your elbows and you stretch your chest out like this. Nope, I feel great. And they're like, Nico, it's your hamstring. Why are you stretching out your elbows?
I would do some leg swings. I'd be like, yeah, look at this. Look at this. This is exactly the same.
Nico, it's the other leg that has your hamstring. See, I'm fine.
Oh, that's diabolical. Yeah, smart thinking. That's the kind of thing you could pull off without somebody really thinking about it too
it
hard.
Looks good
like,
to
wow,
me.
Yeah, it looks good.
Looks good, yeah.
And then later on, he's like, wait a second, that's the wrong leg.
Right. I think the bigger question for me, Seth, and this is the last one, then we'll start acknowledging some people from this weekend. How bad is the Will Anderson ankle injury? We've heard nothing about that over the weekend. And I think the ray of hope for me with the Will Anderson ankle injury, and keep in mind, Will Anderson is a guy who missed training camp and missed multiple games last year with ankle injuries, is that he was really, really trying to get back in the game on Thursday. Now, I don't know how much of that is adrenaline or whatever they shot into his ankle at halftime. I have no idea. They have to have Will Anderson out there on Sunday. I mean, they can win the game without him, but it sure would be a whole lot easier with him out there on Sunday.
There's twofold with Will Anderson. Okay, the immediate concern of, yes, he needs to be out there. The second is just, he seems to, so far in his young NFL career, he seems to have chronic ankle issues.
He does. And I mean, this one got rolled up pretty good, I will
say.
Right,
oh, right, yeah. Good point, good point. This wasn't him just spraining it or something.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. That's pretty, I think a lot of people would have gotten ankle issues, especially when you've got a history of ankle sprains. Sometimes you can aggravate it real quickly, and it feels like your foot's going to fall off for a while, but it recovers quickly,
yes,
too. So hopefully it was as simple as that. But you're right. Yeah, with him moving on the sideline and everything, at the very least, yeah, maybe that's a good sign. The ankles, you know, we saw Joe Mixon try to come back into the game in the Bears game, and it's that next day when you find out, oh,
he tried. Right.
That's
a great point, man. Yeah, Mixon tried and I think got back in for a bit.
He did come back in.
Like Will did. And then went out for the rest of the game. And the next thing you know, yada, 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 he's gone for 3 weeks.
And it was simple. Sam Warren has a really good piece in the Chronicle on this where he just showed when Will was in there, A, he's affecting the quarterback, or B, if he's not affecting the quarterback, it's because the Jets were keeping a tight end in. Yeah. You know, so they just had, when Will was in the game, Aaron Rodgers had three wide receivers to choose, three receivers out on routes. When Will Anderson wasn't in the game, he had four guys out on routes.
Yeah.
And it was a lot easier for him to cut up the blitz when Will Anderson was out.
And it's Aaron Rodgers who, say what you will about age 40, but he still sees everything. You know what I mean? Like, he ain't Sam Darnold where he's going to be missing wide open guys, you know?
He did have a couple of I heard a lot of people who've been watching the Jets all year say he's basically making those same throws. They just happened to that Garrett Wilson shin catch, the Garrett Wilson catch when Jalen Petrie was trailing in coverage. Like, some of those that were just very low percentage probability throws that weren't going the Jets' way definitely went their way that night. Like, say, the Jets' offense, I mean, they marched down on three straight touchdown drives. I'm not saying the Texans' defense allowed that, but there was, it wasn't like you come out of that game thinking, oh wow, the Jets are a machine. Mm-hmm. I just felt like, oh wow, no, the Texans can't even put down this team. Look at what they allowed Aaron Rodgers to do.
Yeah. 5 hour energy fan line. Vikings traded for Cam Robinson and he played well last night. Yeah, he had a holding penalty in there, some penalty, a pre-snap penalty, but he was good. I mean, they had to do that though. They lost their best Duracell, their left tackle. Like, they needed a left tackle. So that was a good
trade for Cam Akers too.
And he looked good last night. Cam Akers looked good last night. Damian Pierce didn't play on Thursday. Yeah.
I was looking at the Texans' inability to run in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, wait a second. I got to remember it, because I went back this morning to watch some of the runs again, and they actually ran the ball pretty well in the third quarter. It was in the fourth quarter when they got down into the red zone, and that's where it's kind of important to run the ball. That's where they fell apart. They can't run the ball in the red zone.
Nope.
When everything gets compressed, they got destroyed. So that part of it, I don't know if that's good or bad. Hey, in the middle of the field, they were still just fine. It was when they got down to where you have to run. This is why they're running Wildcat and everything.
Yeah,
poorly.
Yep.
They ran that Wildcat really, really poorly.
Really poorly. Because
the offensive line has to sell the run, and they didn't look one bit. Not a single one of
them
looked like
it was a run play on that. They're horrible salespeople. They're not good salespeople at all.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's do it. We do it every Monday at about this time. We acknowledge big performances from over the weekend. And big performances in general. We do it in a segment called Acknowledge Me. I will say some names. Ben Gary, our producer, will
acknowledge me.
Hotkey there. Veteran running backs that were cast-offs from their team this offseason.
Acknowledge me.
I'm going to acknowledge Derrick Henry. Give me another one, Ben, for Derrick Henry.
Acknowledge me.
23 carries, 106 yesterday on the ground, 2 touchdowns. In a blowout of the Denver Broncos, both these teams are 5-3 coming into this game, and you really got a feel for, like, okay, one's 5-3 where they've kind of lost focus for a couple of weeks. The other one is 5-3 because they've got an amazing defense and a rookie quarterback that can make a play here and there in Bo Nix, but they are a little fugazi. The Ravens destroyed the Broncos yesterday, and Derrick Henry was a big reason. He has scored a touchdown in every game this year so far, Derrick Henry. He's been an awesome pickup.
and Lamar Jackson became the first quarterback in NFL history to have 4 games with a perfect passer rating.
Man.
So I think that the one-time potential running back project of Lamar Jackson, I think he's safe. I don't think he's going to be a... I don't think they're going to move him to running back anytime soon, Sean.
No, yeah. I don't think so either. He seems to have found a home at quarterback.
I don't even want to think about the Ravens right now.
No, I don't either. I mean, you got the Lions this weekend. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Saquon Barkley.
Acknowledge me!
27 carries, 159 yards, 1 touchdown, and this crazy backward jump over a defender.
Hurts in the gun. He backpedals. He's looking. Still looking. He fires it out in the flat to Barkley, who beats one man, spins past another, leaps over a third, and jumps down at the 30.
What was that? I've never seen that move, and I've been watching football all my life.
Okay. Audio courtesy the Eagles radio network, as you can tell. If you haven't seen it yet, go find it. Saquon Barkley with, I've never seen that before, a backwards leapfrog splits over a player.
It looked like a football version of an and one tape.
Yeah.
It was like, wow.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, you can get away with that in street ball, but not in the NBA.
Yeah.
That's okay, Saquon, go ahead and try that in the NFL. Oh, okay, you just did it.
Yeah.
Okay. That was pretty cool.
It was awesome. Yeah. Cool. It was awesome. And he was really good in that game, too. Saquon Barkley's been awesome this year. Derrick Henry and Saquon Barkley have got to be the front runners for offensive player of the year. You know, while we're on these running backs, the cast-off running backs, we'll call them, Joe Mixon.
Acknowledge me.
He's the only Texan I'm acknowledging today. That's it. He's the only one. Joe Mixon is a dog who brings it every week. If we could take whatever's inside Joe Mixon's heart and put it in the offensive line, Joe Mixon will be rushing for 200 yards every week, not a mere 105 or whatever he's averaging.
And yet, I almost feel like just as CJ started to show some of the effects of porous blocking and protection, to where I think even on plays where the protection is good, sometimes CJ looks a little rushed and hurried.
You think Mixon's getting
I think Mixon's almost starting to second-guess some things. There's times where I'm like, gosh, it looks like he's... You never want the running back to fall into that position where they feel like they got to hit a home run every play. And there's a few times, I mean, Mixon's got a little bit of that in his game because he's so good with his jump cuts and cutting it back across against the grain and everything. There's times with imperfect blocking where I feel like, oh boy, if he would have just hit it there. It's hard. Like, it's not anything where I feel like it's his fault or anything.
Yeah.
It's just he's not always getting a clear picture. So I don't want it to corrupt him the way it's corrupted
CJ. Don't plant that seed, man. I don't need Mixon getting affected by this janky offensive line. All right, Joe Burrow.
Acknowledge
Joe Burrow. He had 5 touchdown passes yesterday. And as I was watching the games yesterday and I'm watching the Bengals continually score in their game, I thought to myself, why did you dye your hair blonde before the season? That was one of the dumbest decisions. As his hair becomes more and more its normal color, he looks more and more like the Joe Burrow everybody anticipated. It's almost like whatever was put in his hair was what was keeping the Bengals down for the first month and a half of the season.
I don't like that he dresses like Billie Eilish. That's is a very Billie Eilish vibe out of Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
I think that was bad, too. It's not like he's just dressing kind of like hip hop or anything.
Right.
He's dressing like a funky white dude from the 90s.
Yeah.
There's something going on with Joe Burrow.
Got to be
there,
presidential.
At least there was. Maybe he's gotten a little bit more back to basics.
Got
to
be presidential, man. I'm like, man, who did the Bengals play yesterday again? Oh, that's right, the Raiders, who fired their whole offensive staff last night. Luke Getsy fired by the Raiders. All right, Alex Gorush.
Acknowledge me.
He is the head coach. This might wind up in the Pettycast tomorrow, too. He's the head coach of South Florida. And if you haven't seen the video yet, especially you Cougs out there, because I know the Cougs all hate Tom Herman like he's like he's the plague right now. The handshake, the coach handshake after the game, after USF, South Florida's win over Tom Herman's FAU squad, Florida Atlantic, 44-21, it was a blowout. The coaches normally shake hands and exchange pleasantries at midfield. Gorish was not sticking around for any pleasantries. He barely touched Herman on the hand and kept walking. This is the winning coach did this to Herman. What did Herman do? Well, take a listen here. Here's the play-by-play after that.
They run for more than 300 yards. The defense ties a school record with 7 sacks. And Tom Herman and Alex Gorish getting into it as they're coming off the field.
That is the definition of a rivalry right there.
Yeah, that's a rivalry, folks.
Yeah, that was Andre Ware and Anish Shroff. Golish, not Gorish, Golish. Herman is chasing him down and waving like, get back here. Hey, you get back here. You're going to shake my hand. Get back here. I should mention that FAU won the game last year between these two teams 56-14. So I saw the post-game press conference, or at least bits and pieces of it, with Golish, and it sounded like there was still some hurt feelings from some things that happened at the end of the game last year. You know, I think Herman might have kept his foot on the gas pedal a little bit at the end of the game.
Went for two.
Did he?
In a blowout.
So Golish promised coming into the season that...
Well, This is what this. So Herman wasn't happy with Golish after USF went for two up big in a blowout last year. Herman had called an onside kick for FAU up big against the Bulls.
Okay,
so it's a yeah. It goes back to.
Dude, Herman is
Golish's face as he snubbed him. It was just like a quick stern look at him and then a walk away.
Herman's the guy. Like Herman will reply to you on social media. Guy, you know what I mean? Like Golish did something that was passive aggressive and a little disrespectful to Tom Herman, and he's going to reply to your tweet five times as to why were you disrespectful to me. He got exactly what he wanted right there. He got a reaction out of Herman.
Was Herman surprised that Golish would be, you know, pissy about the last year? Herman went, he kicked an onside kick when they were up big, and did he expect no retribution whatsoever?
Yes, I think Herman is. I think he gets uptight with anybody that doesn't treat him like he's the cat's ass. That's Tom Herman, man, in a nutshell.
I am the Florida Atlantic head coach, and you will respect me as such. This state belongs to me.
That's right. That's right. This state belongs to me, FAU and USF.
Mm-hmm.
Willie Fritz.
I'm
going to acknowledge the actual Cougars head coach, not the guy who left for Texas. The Cougs beat Kansas State on Saturday. 24-19. It's a game that was delayed for an hour because of weather back here in Houston. I say back here. I wasn't here. I was in Louisiana. The highest-ranked opponent the Cougs have beaten a long, long time. It's the first win over any ranked team since 2019. And the Cougs have won three of their last four. They're 4-5 on the season, so they've still got some work to do to get bowl eligible. But they've won three out of their last four, and the three wins are over TCU, Utah, and Kansas State. Like, those are some really good college football brand names that the Cougs are beating these last, you know, over the last month or so. So credit Willie Fritz, man. He's got the program going the right direction.
And especially, I mean, you score twice in the fourth quarter.
Yes.
It's a reinvigoration over there. Sean.
Gutsy. Yeah. Gutsy. I like it. So props to Willie Fritz and the Cougs. As long as we're talking about college football, Lincoln Riley.
Acknowledge me.
I just have to acknowledge him. I saw somebody point this out. I'm like, this is too good not to acknowledge. Lincoln Riley, who left OU to go to USC. He had a great thing going at OU, but he left to go to USC because USC paid him a ton of money. To live in California, all that, this and that. He gets to USC, and within a year or two, they leave to go to the Big Ten. So now he's having to fly all over the country to play these cold weather games. OU, and there's a lot of conjecture that he didn't want to go to the... He thought that leaving the Big 12 for OU, like the OU leaving the Big 12 was a bad idea because the SEC is tougher than the Big 12. But you were the king of the Big 12 at OU.
Yeah.
As it turns out, those people may be right. OU is 1-4 in the SEC. I say what you will about Lincoln Riley. They'd be better than 1-4 in the SEC with Lincoln Riley as a head coach. Meanwhile, USC is 2-5 in the Big Ten. I am acknowledging Lincoln Riley because he managed to destroy these two blue blood programs single-handedly within 5 years, and he's making $100 million while doing it.
That's
really impressive, you know?
College football coaching, it's a crapshoot in the NFL, obviously, but college football, it feels like it shouldn't be this big of a crapshoot.
Right.
And I know the landscape has changed, but you still do have natural recruiting advantages, mm-hmm. whether it's with transfer portal guys or high school kids, that it doesn't seem like it should be this difficult to be a good coach at a school that's got a whole lot of natural advantages. Yet, here we are.
Yeah.
I feel like the USC job is one of those jobs where it's like, okay, if somebody wants it too much, then they might not be the right guy. Like this whole, I was the first to say, like, how much does being in Southern California really appeal to an actual football coach?
Right.
Because the actual football coaches don't spend much time outdoors other than at practice.
Mm-hmm.
It really shouldn't be that much of a pull. And then you saw the house that Lincoln Riley got. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I think that might have been your biggest indicator was that, okay, this guy was a little too into Southern California.
Yeah, and Southern California, like the USC fan base is not like the OU fan base is really angry right now. Like the USC fan base, I feel like doesn't get SEC level angry.
They're way more blasé about it than most college.
Yeah, they're like, all right, on to the Dodgers, you know, or on to the Rams or whatever.
Yeah.
I and so, yeah, like as long as Lincoln Riley can sit through the pain of the press conferences after the game, it's like, I'm sitting on a pile of money. I still have a reputation as a great offensive mind and play caller and developer of quarterbacks. You look around the league, you know, yesterday, Kyler Murray's going against Caleb Williams. Those are literally two Heisman Trophy winners that Lincoln Riley developed. You know, like tonight, Baker Mayfield's playing. You know, Jalen Hurts had a big game. Like, these are all guys who... Now, Spencer Rattler, it hasn't been quite as good, you know, like with the Saints, but he's still in the NFL. So, yeah, man, Lincoln Riley just chilling with $100 million and destroying programs out there. Good job, Lincoln Riley. All right, that's Acknowledge Me. We cited some social media drama with at least one Texan or a Texan family member that we'll get to in the next segment, but it pales in comparison to the drama going on 5 hours east of here. Holy crap. The drama going on with the Saints right now is some crazy stuff, and we'll tell you where the drama is with the Texans as well as we get ready to hand things off to Mark Vandermeer and John Harris at the top of the hour for a Texans Monday. Stay there.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
This might be better suited for the Pettycast, so it probably shows up again tomorrow at 8 o'clock when Seth and I get petty and acknowledge good pettiness. Where does Kenyon Green's dad taking a one-word run at Chris Strauser rank on the petty or social media drama scale? For those who missed it, at CMallory7, a Texans fan on Twitter, replied to the news of Kenyon Green being knocked out for the season with his shoulder injury with, is it possible for our O-line coach to go out with injury as well? Because that guy is worthless, all caps. Henry Green, facts, 5 exclamation points. Not one, 5 exclamation points, facts.
Yeah, yeah.
Where's that stack up?
I don't know. I feel like it's a minor drama potentially where a family member is, you know, speaking up on behalf of his son.
Yeah.
And I don't want to read too much into it because it could be, I mean, this could happen on the best football team in the world, and it could happen on the worst football team in the world.
True.
A parent sticking up for his son.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, we've seen this at various times in the past. Xavier Suofilo left here and at least was serviceable elsewhere for a long time. I mean, I think he's still in the league.
It was of a couple of years ago. I know that. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, there's enough disjointedness on the offensive line right now that it is really hard to just... It's really hard to account for the individual things that happen every game where the offensive line just looks incapable of handling simple stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's not even amongst the players who are otherwise playing well. There's just too many instances where you're like, how did they miss this guy? How did they not anticipate this? All of those things. And yeah, I think a lot of that comes back to, for me, it's hard for me to pin it on anything other than the coaching, including Bobby Slowick. It's sometimes with offensive linemen, you know how I always feel about this. They tend to be pretty intelligent guys.
Yes.
And usually if it looks like they don't know what they're doing, that's because the scheme is asking them to do things that are too difficult or it's not being coached up properly.
Yeah.
And not to excuse the players themselves, but there's just it's a disheveled mess a lot of the time.
Yep. As far as social media drama goes, the Henry Green tweeting facts pales in comparison to what's going on in New Orleans right now. If you missed it yesterday, Chris Olave, Ben, we have the highlight. Chris Olave, wide receiver for the Saints, former teammate of C.J. Stroud's at Ohio State, almost died on the field yesterday, it looked like. He took a hit over the middle in the Saints' loss to the Panthers. It was brutal.
Carr to throw, dust throw, up and incomplete.
It's going to be a flag.
Yeah, they went to the head of Chris Olave. 1, 2, 3, 4 flags, but Olave is down.
He is hurt. He has not moved at all. A guy the last couple of games that have struggled with concussions, and Chris has not moved at all.
Yeah, of all the people to take that hit, Olave, that's his fourth concussion. Michael Thomas, former Saints receiver, went on a tirade on Twitter at Derek Carr about this.
Yeah.
Derek Carr, for you, I've been told all bleep sad. Derek, dude's scary and panic and just throws the ball. Get him the F out of there. He's ass. That year, his buddy went first team all pro, talking about Devontae Adams in 2022. Carr needed 180 targets just for him to catch 100 passes. He's ass on my granny.
On my granny.
On my granny. He's granny ass is what he's saying. Dude tried to lie and say I was jealous of them making Olave wide receiver one the whole time. He can't even get him a decent ball. He needs his ass whooped.
I think one of Olave's family members co-signed that one.
They did. It was Olave's brother. He co-signed. I'll find it. He co-signed a tweet by somebody out there. So now there's family members in this drama as well.
Weighing in on behalf of Michael Thomas, saying, yeah, he wasn't jealous of Olave. There's another dicey one because Michael Thomas has been kind of an erratic individual himself.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, Derek Carr's proclivity for throwing guys into danger, it's not like it's a new thing or anything.
No.
He did become the first quarterback in history to lose to 31 different NFL franchises.
Good for him.
Yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know which... I'm sure he's lost to the Saints before. I don't know which one he hasn't lost to yet, okay. But maybe he'll get there.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll get there someday.
I saw some stat, like the all-time leading losing quarterbacks through certain seasons in the NFL, and it was like... It was, I wish I had it.
Like, how many games they've lost by year three, by year four,
correct.
By year
five. And year three, David Carr. Year four, David Carr. Year five, David Carr. Year six, David Carr. And then in year seven, Derek Carr. Year eight, Derek Carr. Like, the Carr brothers had a stranglehold on this. Like, the number, the most losingest quarterbacks in NFL history through X amount of years was David Carr forever until Derek Carr took the title.
Okay, so this makes sense. The only team Carr hasn't lost to is the Raiders.
Okay.
And they play the Raiders in week 17.
Oh, that's a clash of the Titans right there, huh? The Saints and Raiders.
If Carr is healthy and starting in that game, he'll have a chance to lose to all 32 NFL franchises. Which is actually, it's impressive. It's impressive in a way. You know, like, to be around that long and to lose to that many different teams and still be the starting quarterback, it's impressive.
That used to be the thing in baseball. Like, if you lost 20 games in a season as a pitcher, your ERA was actually probably better, sometimes significantly better, than a guy who was 10-11 for some good team. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, because they still kept trotting you out there for enough games to lose 20 games because you're actually a decent pitcher on a crappy team.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a fair... That, you're right, that is a little bit impressive. But boy, Michael Thomas, he is not happy with Derek Carr at all.
I'm just pissed off.
Michael Thomas
is just out there right now, right?
Yeah. He's out there. I had seen somebody tweet... I'm not reporting this as news. I've not seen any reports of this by anybody. But somebody tweeted out, like, hey, Michael Thomas on his way to Houston for a tryout. Like, oh, okay, well, we'll see. I don't know if that's... He wasn't good the last couple of years. Like, he was...
I wonder if he's got an Ohio State connection with CJ at all.
I feel like CJ has an Ohio State connection with anybody that went to Ohio State.
That's true. I mean, I've definitely met each other at some event or something along the way. But
yeah, for sure. Let's see. A few texts on the 5-Hour Energy fan line. 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football super fans. This is from Middle Screen. Middle Screen says the Texans needed Mixon to be the dynamic change of pace threat to an explosive passing game. Instead, the team is built around Joe Mixon. This is about as good as a team built around Joe Mixon can be.
I think, honestly, if you're looking for hope with the return of Nico Collins, I would say look at A.J. Brown going to the Eagles, perhaps. And like when A.J. Brown left the Titans, in the modern NFL, even though running backs are making a resurgence this year, I think it's as often that it can be a wide receiver that's the straw that stirs the drink for everybody else. And that Nico Collins, even though it doesn't fix the issues you have with the offensive line, but it can spackle over some of the issues. The issues the Texans are having with dealing with the blitz over these last few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Look, screens to Nico. This team can't set up screens to save their damn life, except when they're just throwing a quick screen to Nico Collins. He's got to beat somebody out in space. Like, some of the things, Nico Collins over the middle on slants, some of these things they can do to help kind of back the defense off of you. Nico Collins makes he doesn't fix the offensive line, but he masks their issues a lot better.
No, but if he's the difference between the Texans having a good offense and whatever this has been the last few weeks, and he's the difference between CJ getting killed and not getting killed, he's the most underpaid player in the NFL.
It doesn't all of a sudden turn them into a credible Super Bowl contender, but I feel like they at least can have more fight than they've had recently.
Seth? Antibodies to you, my friend.
Oh, yeah, antibodies and
stuff.
See
you tomorrow. Yep. John Harris and Mark Vandermeer are up next with Texans Monday. So we will see all of you tomorrow at 6 a.m.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.